Hey everybody, welcome to Backyard Space Opera Podcast. It's me, Kyle. So this week we have a very special show for you because we had planned to bring you our special correspondent Kristen's review of D23, the big Disney convention that was held not this past weekend but the weekend before. But things kind of got a little delayed because we went to San Diego Comic-Con 2017 and had an amazing time, but there was a lot of prep and work and exciting fun things and partying and all kinds of stuff that went into going down to San Diego for the big Comic-Con weekend. And we also had plans to record while we were down there. That kind of got messed up. So what we ended up happening was we did a recording on the drive back from Comic-Con, so you can get our raw experience of what was really fresh in our minds and what seemed to stand out to us right after everything was kind of wrapping up and we had helped our buddy load up his booth on the floor and all kinds of things, and we were on the road. So we said, let's record right now and see what happens. And I think it's pretty exciting. The audio quality is, I think, pretty good, considering that we were driving on the road and everything, but it works. It's not bad. So this is going to be part one of our Comic-Con coverage, because come back next week for Cody and I's reflection on San Diego Comic-Con 2017 and what it means to us here at Backyard Space Opera and ideas for micro-budget filmmaking and media creation and all those great things. So without further ado, here is Kristen and I's raw Comic-Con review right on the drive home after the weekend was over. Hey everybody, welcome to a very special edition of Backyard Space Opera Podcast. We are literally driving away from San Diego Comic-Con 2017, and boy was it amazing in so many ways. But we're not going to talk about that right away. We're going to talk first about the other huge convention that was last weekend, which was D23 2017. So, we have special correspondent Kristen, who was at D23, and is going to tell us all about the highlights, because I was not there, unfortunately. She mocks me. That's fine. That's okay, because we got to go to Comic-Con. It was amazing. But hear about D23, first of all, and then we're going to talk all about the ups and downs, the joys and tears, the epic adventure that was Comic-Con. Kristen, tell us about D23.
D23 was a long, grueling 3-day adventure at the Anaheim Convention Center, getting up at 2 a.m. to be in line for panels at 4 o'clock in the morning. In one particular case, getting there at 4 a.m. and almost being one of the last people to be able to get in for a wristband at the live action panel. So that was crazy and insane and kind of exhilarating, and it was fantastic.
So real quick, maybe we can compare and contrast just a tad. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but tell us about the differences in how you get into these big panels at D23, and then we could talk later about how it works at Comic-Con.
Okay, so the big panels at D23, the large draws are usually the animation panel, the live action panel, the parks and resorts panel. Those are the three big ones that people usually really push to attend, and so the organization changes from year to year, but typically how it works is you show up, there's a finite number of seats in the hall D23 where the large panels are held, and you have to get a wristband. So if you are within that finite number of people to show up, you get a wristband, you get in line, and pretty much you just camp out.
What defines a large panel? Is it the celebrities being there? Is that what's going on?
It's the celebrities being there. It's the kind of reveals that they do in the live action panel. They usually show a lot of special footage from upcoming films. They do big reveals for what movies are upcoming. In the Parks and Resorts panel, they talk about, 2 years ago at D23, they confirmed Star Wars Land. This year, they talked about a lot of other different things and that are coming to the parks in Paris, in Epcot, and in California.
All right. So at D23, you get a wristband based on what you want to go to, and it's kind of like a fast pass, right? You were telling me about that. How does that work?
In a way, it's kind of like a fast pass where you go in and you tell them what panel you're there for. They give you a wristband And you have the option of leaving, going and walking the floor and coming back if you want to, but it doesn't secure your place in line. It just secures you a seat. And so most people typically choose to stay in line or at least like leave stuff there and someone to guard the stuff so that they don't lose their spot. Because if you leave and come back, you're assured a seat, but you might end up like really far stage right or stage left and not be able to see anything and be way in the back.
Because anybody listening to this who hasn't gone to one of these bigger conventions, there's a whole strategy and science, and it's a huge emotional roller coaster just to get into these panels. And it's just fascinating. So we'll get into the Comic-Con piece too. But all right, keep going. Tell us about these panels though, and what was exciting.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with Star Wars first.
You want to? There wasn't a Star Wars panel exactly.
I want to know about Star Wars.
Okay, so Kyle wants to know about Star Wars. So unfortunately, there were no big reveals. We didn't get to see anything of the untitled Han Solo project. They did confirm that it's gonna. I think they said summer 18 is when it's due, but that seems it's because it's a year away. That seems pretty soon. But they did confirm Woody Harrelson and Donald Glover are both going to be in it. We saw a little bit of a sizzle reel from The Last Jedi that shows a little bit more than the trailers that have been released thus far. That's coming out this Christmas.
So what was in that sizzle reel that was cool?
Well, you get to see a lot more of Luke. They actually confirmed that Mark Hamill actually does have some speaking lines in this one. So he's not a mute.
He just looks longingly. It's good.
Right. He just looks longingly. They did bring out a lot of the actors. They brought out Daisy Ridley. They brought out Mark Hamill, the actor who plays Poe. What is his name? I can't remember.
It's been a long Comic-Con weekend, everybody. I would know this, but let's keep going.
Okay. And the really tall actress from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that, no.
No, okay. All right. So they brought out a bunch of the actors, including Daisy Ridley and Mark Hamill, and had them talk to each other. And Mark Hamill actually, like, positioned himself in such a way next to Daisy Ridley and had this great one-liner about how, like, he was purposely positioning himself next to the shorter people because if you think I'm too short for a stormtrooper, which is really good. And everybody cheered and had a good celebration. And Mark Hamill was also inducted into the Disney Legends Hall at this D23 as well.
So, Star Wars Land. Tell us about Star Wars Land.
In Star Wars Land, let's start off with this. Star Wars Land is officially going to be called Galaxy's Edge, although I think people are just going to end up calling it Star Wars Land. But it's officially called Galaxy's Edge. I personally wasn't in the Parks and Resorts panel when they announced the name of it, because I'd been at the live action panel earlier in the day. But I was standing at the Star Wars booth, exhibition, whatever you want to call it, when they announced the name in the panel. And actually, at the moment that they announced the name in the panel, they dropped a banner that said Star Wars at Galaxy's Edge, which to kind of signify to everybody out on the floor that that's the name of it, which was really cool to be standing like in that perfect place right at the perfect moment. They had in the Star Wars exhibit, they had a lot of concept art of what the different lands are going to look like. And they had some props and some mock-ups of cast member uniforms and what things are prospectively going to look like. But the real big draw was this huge model that they had of what Star Wars Land is going to look like when it opens, including where the cantina is going to be. There's two rides that are confirmed, the Millennium Falcon. Unfortunately, I didn't get a good look at it because it's tucked like way in the back, but it looks gigantic and awesome.
So that's a ride, a Millennium Falcon ride?
I believe so. The Millennium Falcon is going to be its own separate ride, but you can't really see it in the model because it's kind of like tucked in the back. But then they had like little droid figurines, a little BB-8 was built into the model, which I thought was pretty cute. Then they also had, which was the big draw for me, which I think is going to be really cool, is they have little like radio controlled droids that are going to be kind of more or less patrolling around Star Wars Land. And so they had one of those patrolling around the exhibit that would come out in front of the guests and then go back behind the, like, the curtain, as it were, and come back. And it was just kind of patrolling around, and it was really cool.
So Star Wars, so not a lot of, like, props and displays and things, but you were telling me that some of the props and stuff that you got to see was from Pirates, correct? I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so every D23, the Disney Archives does a display. It's a really large display, and this year it happened to be Pirates of the Caribbean. There were costumes from, I think, all five movies. There was a, not full size, because that would be pretty astounding, but there was a pretty detailed model of the Black Pearl. There was Davy Jones' actual organ that he plays in Dead Man's Chest.
The model was, like, how big would you estimate? Because you said it was used for the miniature shots in Pirates that weren't CGI, and so it was film used, right?
It was film used, and it's funny that you say that it's a miniature shot because it's massive.
And that's the thing with miniatures, is, like, people don't realize these miniatures for these giant ships, when they do these, like, glamour shots of them, they have to be giant to get the detail. The original Star Trek from the motion picture was, like, 18 feet tall. Even from the TV series, was I think 16 feet long. So these things are huge.
Yeah, and it is. It's huge. And it's, like, got a tremendous amount of detail on it. I'm really bad with length and size, but I would say it's easily, like, 9 or 10 feet tall and 16 feet long.
Like, bigger than a car?
Oh, yeah, way bigger than a car.
Bigger than two cars?
Depending on the car.
Okay. So that's probably around 15, 20 feet.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, so it was a tremendous model. And then they also, in addition to the movies, they also had mementos from the ride. So they had the dog with the key, the iconic dog who's holding the key. They had one of those dogs, one of those animatronic dogs. It wasn't working, unfortunately. I would have loved that. But they had one of those dogs holding the key on display. They had a bunch of the animatronic pieces from the Pirates of the Caribbean ride in Shanghai, because the one in Shanghai is just amazing. It's a lot more based on the movies than the one at Disneyland, but it's still just, technologically speaking, it's incredible.
Okay, so any other highlights of D23 before we get into Comic-Con?
The live action panel is and has been, like, my main go-to. I'm okay if live action is the only panel that I get into, as long as I get into the live action panel. If any of you saw the live action Jungle Book that Jon Favreau made, they previewed the opening sequence to the upcoming live action Lion King, and it's shot for shot a remake of the original animated feature, but it's amazing. It looks absolutely incredible. The animals look really lifelike, and they've done a fantastic job with it. If you didn't like Jungle Book, you probably won't like Lion King. I happen to love the Jungle Book when they did it, so I think Lion King looks amazing.
Now, we were talking, I think that what it should be is Lion King with animatronic animals. That's what I need.
I feel like, yeah. I mean, I can see where you're coming from on that one, but that would be a lot of work. Like, a lot of work. Can you imagine, like, the opening scene with the zebras and the elephants and Rafiki and everything? So they announced also that they are doing a live-action Mulan. And they confirmed that they are doing a live-action Aladdin. And that Will Smith will be the voice of the genie, which was rumored in Variety, but they confirmed that he will, in fact, be doing the voice of the genie. And then a live-action Dumbo, which will be directed by Tim Burton, which I think is oddly appropriate, because I've always found Dumbo to be really creepy. And Tim Burton has that style and that ability to make it just look real kind of, like, dark and creepy. And then Alan Menken, whether he was supposed to or not, confirmed that they're doing a live-action Little Mermaid and that he's currently working on the music for it.
Those live-action Disneys, they're, I know they have a huge following, and it's like, I don't really get into them, but I know there's a lot that goes into them to make the animation seem real. And so I dig that. It's a very cool craft they're doing. Just not my thing, but that's, kudos to them for doing all these movies.
Yeah. To each their own, really.
But, it also goes in, we were talking about the idea of original content. And I think that's a big thing at SDCC is you have these licensed characters from these big properties and versus everybody has some really cool original content. You know, if you listen to the show, we're kind of on the side of trying to make more original content and new content as opposed to just recycling old stuff. Well, Disney is their stuff anyway, so I guess they get to recycle it. I don't know. But it's an interesting entry into that discussion.
Yeah, and I would absolutely love this new computer technology, the style of animation that they've got going on in these new live-action films. I would especially love to see it utilized in some kind of original format rather than a retelling of the old stories. But like I said, I find it incredible. I will take what I can get.
Yeah.
The last thing, we can't have a discussion about D23 without talking about the Infinity Wars. So it's Marvel's 10th anniversary this year. They're doing a 10th anniversary celebration.
Marvel Productions 10th anniversary, not Marvel.
No, Marvel Studios.
Right.
Didn't I say that?
You said Marvel's.
Okay, it's Marvel Studios 10th anniversary celebration. They're doing a special Marvel Studios logo.
I'm that guy. I was like, technically it's Marvel Studios, not Marvel.
I'm going to kill him after this is done.
No, come on.
They, for starters, they brought out just about everyone onto the stage to run this new sizzle reel of Infinity War. Chris Evans, unfortunately, was not there, but Sebastian Stan was there. Paul Bettany was there. Don Cheadle came out. Robert Downey Jr. was there, which he almost never is. They brought out Josh Brolin. Josh Brolin said on stage and made everybody kind of like laugh uncomfortably. It was great. And then they ran the sizzle reel for what they've shot thus far for Infinity War, because they're about halfway through the production process. And it looks just astounding. It looks so cool. And it's all really such a blur. Like, they start with the backstory and showing you little clips of the movies that have come before, for all the way from Iron Man up through Civil War. And I think they even touch on Ragnarok, even though it hasn't been released yet. And then they jump into, and like the second like three quarter or yeah the last three quarters of this sizzle reel is all Infinity War and little clips of each of the actors and in, you know, like various situations. And we find out that Captain America is in fact coming back, but he looks quite different. I won't spoil it. He looks different. Black Widow is blonde. Not sure if that has anything to do with the storyline. It probably doesn't, but it was just something that stuck in my mind. I was like, hold on a second. Was Scarlett Johansson blonde? She was. But it looks, I can't wait for this sizzle reel to go live. I highly recommend watching it when it does because it's amazing. I actually want it to go live so that I can watch it again.
I'm excited for it. I want to see it.
Yeah. Should we talk about Carrie Fisher and the Legends? So Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill were both honored as official Disney Legends this year, among others, Oprah Winfrey, Whoopi Goldberg, Gary Marshall, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee. However, and, you know, Stan Lee actually came to the ceremony. It was amazing because his wife died the week before, and nobody would have expected him to, you know, come to this. But he came out, he gave a very, like, very heartfelt acceptance speech and talked about how grateful he was. And then Mark Hamill came out to accept his and talked a lot about how what Disney meant to him as a kid and how, I want to make sure that I get this line right. He said that Disney provided a tutorial on how I could make my dreams come true. And, you know, how he kept going and how he kept pursuing acting even when things got hard. And then he, you know, talked about Star Wars being his big break and, of course, talked about Carrie. Told her, you know, like that, or told us that she was, you know, fiercely loyal, not at all phony, and how much, you know, deep respect and love he had for her. And he called her, like, his super cool space sis. And then he kind of finished it all up by saying that, you know, if she were here today, she would have flipped me the bird twice already. And, like, kind of made everybody laugh and kind of gave that nod to Carrie Fisher and her that little bit of, like, a sassy edge that she had to her. And it was really touching, and, like, I loved it.
So let's, I think, transition into talking about Comic-Con, because then I also want to kind of compare and contrast some things, too, as we go. So San Diego Comic-Con, we've had a review show last year, but it was very brief because, I think it was just me talking about it. And this year I have a partner, so that's pretty fun. And San Diego Comic-Con is for me, one of the biggest shows, and it's the show that I think of when I think of comic conventions. That's like the original. And it's a special thing to me. And I got to go way back in like 1992. And back then it was much smaller. You could just walk in, buy a ticket. Now it's this amazing process to get in, which we managed to weather the storm. But Comic-Con has grown to the point of this immense beast of a thing that has all this extra stuff coming out of it. And what I wanted to talk about specifically on the show today, not also to give you a recap and how it is, but how we as micro-budget marketers and going to conventions and trying to break through with our product, with our ideas and our product and our art, and trying to get people to see it, because there's so much out there and there's so much noise, and how do we do that? And conventions are a great tool. And we talked about in the WonderCon panel of how we were able to use different techniques to draw people over. And so we saw all kinds of amazing things at Comic-Con, ideas to take away, but then also just some great things to nerd out on. So maybe we start there with just overall, what were some cool things that we liked from Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con this year, that really just stood out for us that were kind of special? So I don't know if you have like a top three or anything like that. Chris, maybe just pick one is fine. What do you think? What's one of the big ones that stood out for you?
One of the biggest things that stands out for me with Comic-Con is how much there actually is to do outside of the convention center itself. So you can actually go down to San Diego in the Gaslamp Quarter and enjoy yourself and experience the feeling of Comic-Con without having to spend a whole lot of money to go down on the convention floor if you don't want to. There's television networks and movie production companies and game production companies that had setups outside in different areas that were free all around the convention center. There was a Star Trek exhibit that, you know, had took up a little storefront on one of the streets, and there was a Leica exhibit that was also in kind of like the same area. And that's one of the things that I really most appreciate about Comic-Con, especially down in San Diego, is that it's not just the convention center, and if you can't get in, then you're kind of stuck. There's things to do and people to see and things to enjoy all over the place for everyone.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed that, because we basically spent the entire day, one of the days we're down there, doing all these extra things and didn't even get to do all of it because there's just so much to do and so many things and couldn't get around. So I highly encourage people who may, you know, always wanted to go to Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con especially. It's really hard to get tickets. It's a good time to just come down and experience the area. But that's an interesting point in that these are all the big companies who have the money to market this way. And I really appreciate, too, all the effort that goes into some of the guerrilla marketing and some of the things people are doing to get their own stuff out. You always see people handing out their own flyers, people trying to hustle and things. So I like that part too. It's like all mushed together. The one thing that stands out for me, first of all, was how San Diego Comic-Con is this awesome pilgrimage to this place of let's have all these people who love all the stuff together, mixing and having a good time. And you could be really big and work for one of the big studios. You could be a small independent artist. You could be a vendor who likes to just sell certain things. And everybody's working together and talking together, and you just meet all these amazing people. And I think that's the beauty of a convention, as we've talked about before. But San Diego Comic-Con seems to be like on hyper steroids of all the different things. The big example, we got to go to a mixer for the Women in Animation, and apparently, the co-creator of Rick and Morty was there, which, of course, we didn't know because we don't know what he looks like. But, you know, we got free drinks and hanging out with these really cool people a bit, and then talking to different associations and the Animation Society. And the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. And I was so tired, I couldn't even hustle as much as I wanted to, different groups and things. So I really love that about Comic-Con. I think WonderCon doesn't have that as much. Even from being a participant of it, I think San Diego has that special kind of, it's a big deal. And I wonder if New York Comic Con has that too, but I've never been to New York, so maybe. But this San Diego, it felt really special that way. So my number two thing was, I always, and they've done this every year I've gone, and it's so amazing. They always have amazing props, and you get to see all the big studios and even some small companies who do the micro budget stuff. You can see they bring their costumes and their props, and you get to examine them in detail. And if you know, I'm a sculptor and artist and things, and I get to see artists, different forms of their art, different processes of their art. And so this year we got to see, there's just too many to list to talk about all of them. One of my favorite things that I saw was the dropship model from Aliens, from the sequel to the James Cameron Aliens movie. We talked about how much we love those shots of the dropship for the Space Marines coming down in Aliens and how awesome it was. I got to see the actual model. It's on an auction, and it looks really bad. It was in terrible shape. It was clearly, but even its heyday, you could see that it wasn't a super detailed model. And I love seeing that because it gives me hope that our things don't have to be super detailed to be awesome on screen. And also got to see the RoboCop suit from RoboCop 2. And same kind of thing. It was very well done, but also not perfect in any way. And it had degraded over time because it's very, very old. And all the foam parts had kind of cracked and things. But it was still just amazing to see this. This was the one they used in the filming and take inspiration from that. So I took some very close pictures to give me a reference. We saw a model actually used in the original Star Wars of an A-Wing fighter. And that model was actually very detailed. It looked really good, but it was also very small. So I think that's interesting, because normally they make them really big to make those detailed ones. This was a small one. So I don't know if it was a background shot or not, but that was really special to me as well.
Just kind of tacking on to what you can, it is very heartening to see these props and these costumes up close and to recognize that it is possible to achieve something that looks fantastic on film and looks really cool without having to have it be, you know, perfection. You can have this, you know, space age armor that still looks good even though it's made out of foam. You don't have to, you know, put a lot of expense into something to make it look good if you're willing to practice the skills needed to, you know, carve and work with the right material in the way that you need it. You know, that is one of the things that I think is the most encouraging. So my number two would have to be Artist Alley and walking around and seeing all of the original artwork and original creations that people make. And, you know, a lot of the times they have their own shops on Etsy, their own websites, things like that. But walking around Comic-Con and actually getting to see these things for sale at the tables gives me, you know, and I hate to get like philosophical and existential with it, but it gives me hope, because a lot of the time I see that element of creativity and individuality like waning and kind of, you know, being discouraged in a lot of people, particularly kids growing up. And so to see that element is alive and well in places like this gives me that hope that even as children were, you know, kids aren't always really encouraged to speak their mind and be individual and follow their passions, that at some point they will find the outlet, they will find what they're good at and the encouragement that they need to be creative. And also the community about it that surrounds it as well is fantastic, because people love to talk about the things that they create, from, you know, from like painters to comic book illustrators to cosplayers who create their own costumes. People love to talk about the process and what goes into making all the things that they create, and they're so proud, and they're so like flattered that you would, you know, ask them about the process and ask them what it took to go into it, because it's like having all of their hard work recognized and honored, even if it's just by one person. They're so excited that, you know, even one person takes the time to say like, hey, how did you make that? And they go, oh, well, let me tell you. And you know, it forms bonds and it creates a really tight community, and I like it a lot.
I was thinking the exact thing as you're talking, how there seems to be space and room for everybody, and there's all kinds of styles and tastes and this and that, and it's all appreciated and it's all loved. And it may not be your favorite thing, but it's there's still this recognition of, wow, that's pretty cool. I like that. Or, wow, I can see the skill that went into that. And there's all kinds of pieces. So I'll throw out my next thing. We got to go see the Star Trek Discovery, the new Star Trek TV show. And this is one of the bonus things, again, outside of Comic-Con. They had all the props, all the costumes, the photo opportunities, and all kinds of cool stuff, which I didn't get my photo because I put in my email wrong, but because I was having a little bit too much fun at the mixer and things, but that's okay. The point is, they had all the props, and one of the things I want to talk about was in this new Star Trek, they looked amazing, and they were kind of classic-based designs. What I noticed happening was all of the guns and the phasers and all the pieces were 3D printed. And all of the descriptions talked about how they were 3D printed, and you can kind of tell that they were 3D printed in the way, you know, just that intricate kind of style that you see with the computer renderings, very mechanistic. As opposed to these older props we saw were clearly made from clay, because they had, or they were, you know, they were cast from clay molds because the lines weren't exactly straight. There were little curves and bumps and things that are imperfections you get when you make a clay mold. And especially when you mold things, many copies of a thing from a mold. And these 3D printed ones didn't have that. And they looked amazing. So I'm actually kind of encouraged, and this is kind of an official announcement, I guess, in that I'm going to be trying to move a little bit into the 3D printing world. So more to come on that as I experience the 3D. But that was kind of neat to see. That's the direction they seem to be going in. So, Krista, do you have any more before we move on to different topics of Comic-Con?
Because we are currently driving home from Comic-Con, and I'm exhausted. As fun as it all was, it's also very tiring. I'm sure more things will spring to mind as, you know, the next couple days wear on and my mind processes all of the, you know, fantastic things that we got to see this weekend. But for right now, I'm having trouble coming up with things.
So that's my next thing. So let's talk about like going to San Diego Comic-Con or going to conventions in general, the bigger conventions. There's a whole thing, a stamina to it, a process. So what was it like for you, Kristen? Because you haven't been in a while to Comic-Con. It's continued to grow. What did you think of the whole thing as an attendee, I guess, the experience?
Comic-Con, I think I went to my first one when I was 15, possibly 16, and it is considerably bigger than it was when I first attended. You know, the competition is definitely a lot tougher to get tickets, because Kyle had said that when he went in 92, you could just walk up and buy a ticket and go in. And it wasn't quite that easy when I first went, but it was pretty easy and pretty small. You know, the lines to get in were not queued up around the block. And it's just like the size that it's grown to, and this was about my fifth Comic-Con, the size that it's grown to comparatively to how it started was just amazing. You know, all the cosplayers who kind of use it as an opportunity to showcase their talents. you know, they can't move more than 3 feet without somebody else stopping them for a picture. And you know, if you stand out in front of the convention center and you look out on the streets that are visible from it, and you just see like the sea of humanity, it's really kind of, it's amazing that that many people can coexist in that little teeny tiny like swath of space. But they do, and they can, and it's fun.
So maybe this could be a good crossover too, because the cosplay is a big piece of this. And we've talked about cosplay before on the show with Kristen. So maybe, Kristen, can you tell us a little bit what you thought of the cosplay at Comic-Con and anything cosplay in general you want to say?
So for me, I spent a lot of this weekend looking at the cosplayers, the female ones in particular, and wondering about what goes into the choices they make for a particular cosplay. Saw a lot of Reys from Force Awakens, and also saw a lot of Suicide Squad Harley Quinns, which is an interesting juxtaposition between the two. And then I also saw a lot of girls who were cosplaying male characters, like Captain America is the one that I saw quite frequently. And I, you know, I look at the differences, and I know that everybody has their own opinions about, you know, what signifies a strong female character. So I'm not going to get on my soapbox about that. But I did spend a lot of these, like, looking at a lot of this Comic-Con, looking at the different cosplays and wondering, like, what goes into a woman's decision to cosplay a particular character. Because, you know, like I said, lots of Reys, lots of New Hope Princess Leias. Saw two Slave Leias maybe the whole time, which was kind of interesting to me because Slave Leia is a fairly popular cosplay for women. And then, you know, the flip side is the, you know, Suicide Squad Harley Quinn with the booty shorts and the pigtails and everything. So that was what I spent a lot of time like kind of thinking about and wondering about and talking to different cosplayers about.
And I always am fascinated by cosplay because of the craft and art that goes into their costumes. A lot of these like armors and kind of materials they use, and because we've talked before how cosplay is not just getting the shot, it's you're wearing this all day long, it's a live performance costume, it has to look good from different angles, and so it's a different kind of skill set almost than what we're doing with movies and costuming. So more to come on that. We want to talk more about it as we go through the year with Backyard Space Opera. So The other thing that with Comic-Con that you touched on was the sea of humanity and all these people, and how there's always that debate about the celebrity of Comic-Con and how, oh, it's not like it used to be. It used to be about the comics and da-da, but now it's just about celebrity hunters and things like that. And we saw that with they call it Hall H, is the big hall with the panels that have the studios behind them where the celebrities come. Not always, but celebrities are at a lot of the different panels, but the big groupings of celebrities are in this Hall H. And the line to get in Hall H this year seemed just, it grows exponentially every year. Like this massive thing, people camping out for days and days, horror stories about people getting in and not getting in. My thought is there's room for everybody. I think Comic-Con does a fairly good job of saying if you want to celebrity hunt, you want to do those kind of things and really be part of that new, brand new stuff that's coming out, that's cool, go do that. If you want to do it more for the craft, they have a whole movie making, micro-budget movie making course you could do. They have art tutorials you can do. They have ones with celebrities in certain areas of movie making, like costume designers and prop designers. And I think you can go to Comic-Con experience it in any way you want to, which is what I really appreciate. Did you feel that way, Kristen, or what did you think? Any thoughts on that?
I agree that you can have any kind of experience with Comic-Con that you set out to. The Hall H system is definitely different than it used to be. The first time I queued for Hall H, you could still queue inside. Like, they would still sit you, you know, along the wall in the hallway. And that's definitely not the case now. You know, Kyle was saying that people were, like, camped out for days and days, and that's true. People, you know, bring, like, tents and folding chairs and sleep outside for, you know, 2 days just for the opportunity to be in Hall H for one specific panel. But I absolutely agree that you get out of Comic-Con what you put into it. And if you go in with an open mind and reserve judgment on others, you'll enjoy yourself, you'll have a good time, you'll be able to get the experience out of it that you're looking for, because it is so multifaceted. There's, you know, the classic comic collectors who are, you know, who are really serious about it, who are so familiar with, you know, all of the, you know, the comic book series, and you can go talk to them and they can, you know, tell you exactly what you're looking for, and if they don't have it, they can tell you who does. And on the flip side, you know, there's companies that, you know, specialize in cosplay, companies that specialize in like the artistry. There's special effects makeup booths if you're into, you know, the more technical aspects of filmmaking, and it's so multifaceted that there is something for everyone. And so to be a purist, which is kind of how I would characterize what Kyle was talking about with the, you know, comic book or Comic Con used to be about like the comics. To be a purist doesn't really work with Comic Con anymore, but you can still enjoy yourself and have a good experience.
Absolutely. And to kind of wrap things up, I think what's happening, and we've talked about before, but just to kind of sum it up from this most recent experience that's fresh in our minds, is the convention idea has spread all over the country, all over the world. There's more and more conventions, and I highly encourage everybody to go and find one that they think is cool in their local area and support it and see it grow too, because I think there's room for all these conventions to be a place for everybody to go and to share their art or whatever it is that they do, and storytelling and all that stuff. And we can all kind of have these times and places to get together, because San Diego Comic-Con, like we were just saying, it sells out. You can't get in. It's very difficult. And, you know, that's okay, because the good news is there's something cool that you can get into, and it just takes a little bit of effort to find them. And we're going to do some cool shows in the fall. We're looking to go to WhoCon if you're in the San Diego area, which is going to be in the fall, and hopefully some more shows coming up in the spring. But wherever you are, there's going to be a great show, whether it's big or small. Give it a chance, because the idea is to go be with people who are in your boat and give you encouragement. I take a lot of energy from going to these shows and meeting people. And so that's kind of my final thoughts on that. So Kristen, kind of what else, did we miss anything? Do you want to say before we wrap up?
No, I think we've kind of hit all the main points that you and I wanted to discuss. It was an amazing time. It was a ton of fun. We were here, there, everywhere. We were there for the full 4 days, and you know, it's exhausting and exhilarating at the same time. And I'm so tired and so happy that we're going home, but so sad it's over at the same time.
But you know what we can do? Here's what we can do. Just talking about the celebrity piece. Let's talk about, what was your favorite celebrity sighting? Who did you like seeing?
My favorite celebrity sighting was you sending me pictures of Arrow. While I was outside and you walked by the booth. I'm trying to think. I don't think I saw any celebrities. This time we did see Kevin Smith, but we paid to see Kevin Smith. So
we saw him, though. Technically, we saw him.
That is true. We did see Kevin Smith interviewing someone on the IMD boat, which was really cool. IMDb had a huge yacht that was parked in the harbor behind the convention center, where they were throwing parties and having events and doing all kinds of cool things. But I did enjoy you sending me pictures of Arrow.
Because that was getting my favorite, was seeing Stephen Amell, Arrow. It was like, oh, that's Stephen Amell. Awesome. I'm going to take a picture of you. So that was pretty cool. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for listening. And, you know, we wanted to give you the raw experience of San Diego Comic-Con 2017 as we drive home in this giddy, strange, tiredness state that we're in. So come back next week as we talk more about microbudget filmmaking. Any questions, comments, ideas, info@backyardspaceopera.com. Give us a rate and review wherever you get the show. And we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.